6:02, so we're going to go ahead and get started. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to today's Interested Persons meeting. My name is Nancy Jackson. I'm the Director of Strategic Communications at the Ethics Commission, and we are being joined today by Executive Director Heather Holt and Policy Director Tyler Joseph. We're also being joined by some of our commissioners. And the purpose of this special meeting is to solicit public comment on the city's lobbying laws and the 2018 recommendations. To provide a bit of background, in 2018, the Ethics Commission recommended that the City Council adopt a comprehensive set of updates to the city's lobbying laws. The municipal lobbying ordinance had not been thoroughly updated since 1994, and the Ethics Commission spent 2 years conducting research and analyzing laws around the country. The Ethics Commission also extensively engaged the public during the review. Feedback was solicited and provided at 5 public commission meetings, 5 interested persons meetings, and 4 meetings with groups representing more than 65 neighborhood councils. The Ethics Commission also sent multiple emails to its more than 8,500 subscribers and created a page on its website to solicit public input. But because no legislative action was taken on the 2018 recommendations, and they expired in March of 2020. So at its December 2020 meeting, the Ethics Commission expressed an interest in the possibility of a new set of lobbying recommendations and asked staff to solicit additional feedback from the public and regulated communities. So at this time, the Ethics Commission would like to hear from you. Please tell us what you think about the 2018 recommendations or the lobbying laws in general and how they apply to lobbying entities such as lobbyists, lobbyist employers, lobbying firms, development expediters, business improvement districts, nonprofit organizations, etc. You may provide public comment here today on the Ethics Commission's website as well at ethics.lacity.org/policy or by emailing us at ethics.policy@lacity.org. For details, you can, again, go to our website at ethics.lacity.org/policy. And at this time, I would like to turn it over to our Policy Director, Tyler Joseph, who will be providing additional guidance.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. Great. Thanks very much. Well, first, I just want to say quickly to everybody who's in this call right now, thank you very much for showing up. We appreciate you taking the time to turn out and to let us know what you think about all this stuff. For the people in here who attended the previous meetings, welcome back. This intro is going to sound pretty familiar, but for the benefit of the new people, the format that this meeting is going to take is going to be really straightforward. It's essentially going to take the shape of public comment at a regular meeting. So in just a minute, we're going to open this up. We're going to let everyone who'd like to speak have a chance to speak, and we are going to work through the callers until we've heard from everyone. Like Nancy mentioned, if you have specific questions you'd like to submit in writing, you can submit those through our website or to ethics.policy@lacity.org. And
Tyler, you cut off. Tyler, are you there? Okay, well, I think Tyler was just making the announcement reminding everyone of the web address. If you want additional information, please visit us at ethics.lacity.org/policy or email us at ethics.policy@lacity.org. So with that, we're going to go ahead and get started. If you have a public comment, please dial *9 to raise your hand. You will be called to speak in the order in which you raise your hand. So we'll go ahead and start with caller with phone number ending in 464. caller, phone number ending in 464, please dial *6 to unmute. Caller with phone number ending in 464, if you can please dial *6 to unmute. Okay, we're going to move on to the next caller. Caller with phone number ending in 232. Caller with phone number ending in 232, if you can please dial *6 to unmute. Okay, caller with phone number ending in 525. If you can please dial *6 to unmute. Okay, we may be having a technical issue. Let's check on that to be sure. If you can please stand by, thank you. Okay, it looks like that has been resolved. Apologies for that. So we'll go ahead and get back to caller with phone number ending in 464, who was first in the queue. Caller with phone number ending in 464, if you can please dial *6 to unmute and state your name for the record. If you can also spell your name, that would be helpful.
Hi, this is Emily. Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Great.
Thank you, Emily.
So Emily Gibson, G-I-B-S-O-N. First, I would like to thank you for hosting these meetings this week, and a special thanks for offering them at different times. As many on this call probably know, we're actually in the middle of a reporting month, so having this towards the end of the workday was immensely helpful, so thank you. I am the Senior Lobbying Compliance Analyst at Latham & Watkins, which has been registered as a lobbying firm with the city for many years. I briefly commented at the last two Ethics Commission regular meetings about the practical issues I anticipate from some of the proposed reporting requirements, namely the combination of having to list names and titles for individual contacts plus shortening the filing deadline. I also listened in on the calls from earlier this week and agree with many of the comments that were given yesterday about this issue. But one point that I would like to emphasize at tonight's meeting is that these concerns are based in a desire to comply, not an unwillingness to complete additional paperwork, which I think was the implication of some of the other comments, or at least how I interpreted them. If this were simply a matter of additional paperwork, that would be much less of a concern. We take our compliance obligations very seriously and understand that timely disclosure of lobbying activities is important. And we also understand that such disclosures require paperwork, sometimes lots of paperwork. This is why I have the job that I have. I coordinate all of the firm's lobbying filings across the state and make sure that both the firm itself and our lobbyists are fully compliant with all of the applicable rules and that all of our paperwork is accurate and gets filed on time. So the concern here is that despite my best efforts and the best efforts of our lobbyists, it would be extremely difficult to ensure that the correct name and title is listed for every contact and that we get all of this information and the associated documentation finalized within a shorter time frame. This could easily result in either missing information or submitting reports past the deadline, neither of which are in the interest of the public or our firm, for that matter. So as the commission and staff continue to work on and consider these proposals, I would just encourage everyone to recognize that the points made over the past several weeks about the practical on-the-ground challenges for filers are coming from a desire to comply and cooperate, and also from those already complying with the current law. And I don't think these concerns can be dismissed or simply reduced to a complaint about paperwork. So I'll leave it there. Many thanks for your continued time and efforts on this important matter.
Thank you. I would like to acknowledge a couple of our commissioners who are joining us. Commissioner Jeffrey Darr and Commissioner Laura Janow are joining us. So thank you all for being here and for raising your hands. We'll go ahead and take the next caller with phone number ending in 232. Caller with phone number ending in 232, please state your name for the record, and if you can spell your name as well, that would be helpful.
Hi, this is Jacqueline Silvers, S-I-L-V-E-R-S. I'm here on behalf of the Los Angeles Chamber. I appreciate the opportunity to provide our comments this week to the City Ethics Commission about the proposed new lobbying laws, the agenda item 2. The Chamber believes that these new proposals would prove to be burdensome, as a lot of other folks have been commenting to many lobbyists, including our own staff who are registered. We're coming to support our coalition of lobbyists and businesses who work hard on important issues and inform electeds about their constituents' concerns and suggestions. You know, we don't believe lobbyists should be required to report, you know, the names and titles of every single city official and city employee contact or the dates. It, you know, again, it requires a report on every single client. We've heard about, you know, how that's incredibly burdensome for those who want to comply. You know, we don't want to be in a position where there's a strong record of compliance, which, again, all of us take very seriously, but then missing an email shouldn't put you at risk of being penalized. You know, under this proposal, every communication would be reported, including text messages, every email, potentially contact with neighborhood councils. We've even heard that there's the maybe unintended consequence of even talking in the hallway would be considered a contact. The required frequency of disclosures would also prove to be challenging. Again, we all agree in adequate, fair disclosures of names and offices, but this would really prove to be difficult for those that comply, for a lot of lobbyists, and again, for people who are, you know, submitting this paperwork. In other cities, not every meeting and contribution is required to be listed, and they still have pretty rigorous standards. We believe the commission should focus more on non-filers than increasing reporting requirements on firms and organizations that do comply. You know, we think that the proposed qualification threshold for in-house lobbyists of businesses, nonprofits, and even labor unions is too low. We think a low threshold would require many more to register and could stifle communication between our businesses and nonprofits and their elected representatives. We think that the new definition of indirect lobbyist is too broad and vague. So overall, we need to focus on what the public cares about, names on record, identifying lobbyists, names of clients, how much, you know, was paid, what we're working on, you know, all the needed disclosures that are already being reported. And again, taking that responsibility very seriously. But for those lobbyists that regularly comply, we need to be able to speak with our electeds who represent us without being, you know, the risk of being penalized, especially during such challenging times. We thank the commission and appreciate the opportunity to comment.
Thank you. Caller with phone number ending in 525, you have the floor. If you can please state your name for the record, and if you can spell it for us, that would be helpful.
Hello, this is Veronica Perez, P-E-R-E-Z. Good evening. I am the owner and I founded and run the public affairs firm Veronica Perez and Associates. It's one of the few woman and Latino-owned public affairs firms in L.A. I'm also an attorney, and I actually prepare all of my own lobbying reports for my firms, which means for our small business that, you know, I run the administrative part of the business, I file the reports, I do the underlying work. I'm not complaining at all. I absolutely love what I do. But I would be concerned about any new requirements that, quite frankly, would make it more difficult to comply. I really do appreciate, first of all, this whole effort around seeing how we can make, you know, get ultimate transparency in this process in the city. I appreciate that very much. And also, thank you so much for taking the time to take these comments. I know that there is a draft out there that could have been moved forward as is, but it is really appreciated that you're taking our feedback. And, you know, at our firm, we really pride ourselves in doing things right. We, in the almost 8 years we've been in business, We've never been late. I have multiple inquiries into the Ethics Commission. I think Mark Lowe is gone, but I think he would definitely know me because any ambiguity, I would call him because we just wanted to get it right. And in particular, so I do appreciate this process. I am concerned about the proposed requirement to require that every single text, email, and conversation and be disclosed, because I do believe that that would make it very difficult for people to completely comply. I mean, I'm sure all of you will relate to this. I probably get no fewer than 100 various communications, you know, or engage in, you know, 100 communications every single day via text, email, conversations, and lots of multitasking. I could be on a Zoom, you know, sending multiple texts, sending multiple emails. Despite, you know, being very diligent, I think it's entirely possible that things could slip through the cracks. And because of that, perhaps be subject to unfair enforcement actions, and not by, and I don't even mean from the Ethics Commission, but I can see scenarios where competitors in the industry, or even on a policy issue, people on the other side could really use this as a tool to harass. It would be pretty easy. Do a Public Records Act request of all communications, compare that line by line with the lobbying report, do an anonymous report, and there you go. Someone is embroiled when they had nothing but, you know, good intentions. So I'm hoping that any of the changes that you end up approving really is justified by a compelling policy interest. And I'm sure there are many that you're considering that will be. I don't think that this is one of them. In addition, requiring that the title of every individual we contact is disclosed, I also think will lead to inadvertent noncompliance. There, you know, people's titles change. They're not all available online. You know, other than, you know, usually the chiefs of staff and, you know, planning directors, I pretty much don't know most of the titles of the people I'm talking to. So I don't see how that leads to disclosure. Currently, what is required, I think, is really effective in not just in this area, but in a lot of the areas. For instance, you know, every quarter I need to disclose, you know, what clients paid me, how much they paid me, what are the issues they paid me to lobby on, and what are the different departments that I lobbied. And, you know, and I actually think that's pretty comprehensive. And if anyone wanted more information than that, there is the ability to do a Public Records Act request to get precise conversations with individuals. So I do think that is something that is already working, as is the 30 days to file. I don't understand how shortening the window from 30 to 20 days really, you know, what that serves. But I will tell you, as someone who's running a small business, that already with the 30 days, with running the business, you know, finding, going back and compiling everything I did to be able to report in an accurate manner, I think 30 days is a good time period to be able to do that. So those are my comments. Again, thank you so very much for taking them.
Thank you for that. I would like to acknowledge Commissioner Andrea Orden, who has also joined us here today. And we will now be taking caller with phone number ending in 080. Caller with phone number ending in 080, if you could please state your name for the record, and if you can also spell it, that would be helpful.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good afternoon. My name is Andrew Kratzer. That's K-R-A, T as in Tom, Z as in Zebra, E-R. I'm with the AFRIAT Consulting Group. I'm one of the firm's registered lobbyists. I'm also registered at the County of LA and in West Hollywood, so I do a lot of paperwork to maintain that status. Our firm is very proud of having a record of full compliance since the inception of the City Ethics Commission decades ago. I want to thank the commission and staff for their effort to create some new regulations, but what the commission staff is suggesting is not the answer. If you look at the news recently, it was folks inside City Hall who started these scandals, not lobbyists trying to initiate bribes. City Ethics Commission staff should be focused on the real problems in City Hall. None of what's being proposed by staff gets at the heart of those issues. That's the hard work, but that's the work that needs to be done. In particular, lobbyists should not be required to report names and titles of all city officials and city employees contacted or the dates of such contacts. It's very onerous to require lobbyists to keep track of each and every separate email, text message, telephone call, and meeting with city officials and employees. And it's nearly impossible to expect someone who talks to and texts city employees every day as part of his or her job to be able to accurately keep track of all those contacts. We routinely receive telephone calls and emails from city officials, whether it's in our offices, our cars, in meetings, while traveling, even while attending and monitoring hearings like this one. It's not reasonable to expect lobbyists to be able to keep track of each and every time they talk to or otherwise interact with a city official. The current law provides adequate information to the public about lobbying activities, and this increased burden isn't justified by any compelling policy interest. Again, let's focus on where the real corruption is. Let's focus on problems, not burdening us with more paperwork. Sounds good in a press release to say that the city is adding restrictions to lobbyists, but the truth is that lobbyists who are registered and following the rules aren't the problem. And there's no reason to burden the compliant registered community with these impossible to comply with gotcha style rules. Thanks.
Thank you for your comment. Caller with phone number ending in 073. Phone number ending in 073. If you can please dial *6 to unmute and state your name for the record. And if you can also spell it, that would be helpful.
Hello, my name is Cynthia Strathman, and it's C-Y-N-T-H-I-A. The last name is S-T-R-A-T-H-M-A-N-N. I'm the Executive Director of Strategic Actions for a Just Economy, or SAGE, in South Los Angeles, and we are a 501c3 nonprofit that works with extremely low-income residents, mostly tenants. Our primary areas of focus are tenant rights, healthy housing, and equitable development. And since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, we have been providing direct assistance to tenants who cannot meet their basic needs. The tenants that we work with face a number of very severe challenges in their day-to-day lives. Housing in South Los Angeles is some of the most overcrowded in the country. As you all know, Los Angeles is the most unaffordable housing market in the country. And much of the housing that the tenants we work with occupy is in terrible condition. Water leaks draw infestations of cockroaches and rats and vermin. You know, one tenant we worked with was spraying himself with Raid every night to keep away bugs. And during the pandemic, the overcrowded housing conditions, and combined with the fact that many tenants work in essential jobs, has led to, you know, one of the highest rates of COVID infection in the country. And often these folks don't have a really much of an idea of who their elected officials are or how to reach them. And so we try to help tenants make their voices heard and represent their interests with elected officials. We know that there are new regulations coming on lobbying for, in terms of the regulations as they are written to apply to nonprofits. We support the current formulations that you're proposing. They seem reasonable. I know there are still strictures on who is and is not exempt from certain types of activities, and also in terms of who, in terms of what kind of activity is or isn't allowed, but we feel that these are fair restrictions, and we support the regulations as they've been written, and hope that we can be able to move forward with these as they apply to nonprofits. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. We will now be hearing from caller with phone number ending in 804. Phone number ending in 804. If you can please dial *6 to unmute, state your name for the record, and if you can also spell it, that would be helpful.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Casey Madren. That's spelled C-A-S-E-Y-M-A-D-D-R-E-N. First, I'd like to thank the Commission. I am very grateful for the recommendations for updating our ethics laws. I think it's badly needed. Obviously, with the series of guilty pleas and also the indictments under the Department of Justice investigation, it's clear there's a very serious problem. I actually believe the recommendations are excellent. I sent some written comments, and I won't go over all of them, but I would like to talk a little bit about an issue that apparently is of great concern to lobbyists, and that is being required to disclose the title and division of each city official contacted. I don't see this as being a problem at all. In fact, I've been very frustrated by the fact that it's difficult to find out who lobbyists are dealing with. In the first place, the idea of this being burdensome to lobbyists like Latham and Watkins and Afriat Consulting, according to the lobbying reports, these people are making millions of dollars, and I suggest if there's some extra work involved, you maybe hire a little bit of extra staff to help you with that. Secondly, as far as the difficulty of keeping track of your contacts, I'm sorry, again, in this electronic age, you have an electronic trail of everybody you contact, especially if it's by phone or email or if you're doing a Zoom call. It's very easy to keep track of those people. I don't see why that should be an issue at all. Thirdly, I can understand the difficulty maybe with reporting the title of each person you're talking to, because sometimes, you know, it is difficult to keep track of city employees' titles, but then just the name of the person you're talking to and the division that they worked for. I think this is very important. And I believe, I mean, the ethics, the city is here to serve the people, not to serve the lobbyists. And one of my great frustrations is I feel like the city council especially feels that their job is to serve lobbyists. And I'd like to point out to the gentleman who said the problem is with the city council members that actually a lobbyist did plead guilty to bribing a city council member. So there's obviously a lot going on that the public doesn't know about. There are certainly situations that need to be investigated further where proof hasn't surfaced. And so, once again, I would just like to say I strongly support the Ethics Commission's recommendations, and I especially believe that the lobbyists should be required to disclose the either the name or title of the person they speak to and the division they work for. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. We will now be moving on to a caller with phone number ending in 829, phone number ending in 829. If you can please state your name for the record, and if you can spell your name, that would also be helpful.
Hi, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
This is Blair Beston. My last name's Besten. I'm the executive director of the Historic Core Business Improvement District, and we do clean and safe services for over 50 blocks in part of Skid Row and most of the historic core in downtown Los Angeles. I know some of my colleagues have already spoken to you, and I may be repeating some of the points that they've made. But just to give you a little bit of an idea of the services we provide, last year, nearly 2 million pounds of trash we hauled away, 7,000 graffiti tags, 48,000 bulky items from illegal dumping, over 1,200 power washing hours, thousands of calls for safety team services. We trimmed over 100 trees. We host a regular certified farmers market every week. A lot of the people that live in the neighborhood are low income or don't have vehicles. And it's one of the first that was offered to residents. We have one of the densest residential populations. Sixth and Spring is the densest residential population in Southern California. We're a truly 24-hour district. We're the epicenter of a lot of the bars and restaurants. I would just, my first point would be that we are a city contractor. And I would say that there are few city contractors, if any, that are required to register as lobbyists. Just to give you an example, Vertellus Towing is a city contractor. They won a bid, and they, through the police commission, they have to interact on a regular basis with city departments and detectives as a function of the work that they do. So to the point that was made about bids choosing to form, bids came out of the legislature, and by enacting the law, they essentially solicited the call for our type of services to the community. And this is a decision that initially, upon formation, is weighed in on by a large portion of the impacted area by vote. So when others bid on a city contract, how often are multiple parties to a given area given the opportunity to weigh in on that city contract? I would argue that, you know, our situation is much more transparent than most city contract procedures. It is to the issue of transparency also, and I know this point has been made, we already have tremendous requirements per the Brown Act. We hold public meetings. We spend countless hours and resources responding to public records requests. We also have regularly quarterly and annual reporting requirements to the city clerk. These are posted online. I mean, these are available to the public. So all of these disclosures are far more transparent. They expand time and money and resources that, you know, takes away time and resources for the district. So we choose to exist, but once we enter into a contract, there's an understanding that we are augmenting services that the city typically provides but cannot provide to the level needed to attract and keep commerce, even to dense urban areas with tourism and residents. To give you an example, the city may visit and collect trash once a week in a given area without a bid from public trash cans, but they're not able to do that multiple times a day. And in a heavily trafficked neighborhood, you know, for example, ours, we have 147 trash cans in our district, which are emptied, wiped down, and relined multiple times a day. This is a beneficial arrangement for city and local properties and businesses. And these arrangements, by the way, are common. They occur all over the world where the government revenue is not sufficient to provide this level of services. Another, just the last point I'd like to make as far as advocating, you know, as a function of our work, you know, often the city reaches out to us for information. I know at one point all of the bids, we gathered the data that collectively in the downtown area, over 1,000 streetlights were out and needed to be serviced. That's information that we were able to collectively provide to the city so that they could provide their services. So that's really it. And I thank you for letting us have this opportunity to explain to you what we do and to weigh in these meetings. So thank you.
Thank you for your comment. We'll now be moving on to caller with phone number ending in 735. Phone number ending in 735. If you can please dial *6 to unmute.
Hello?
Hi, yes, we can hear you.
Oh, perfect, okay. Hi, I'm Magdalena Mirelis, spelled M-I-R-E-L-E-S, and I'm the Senior Program Manager for Capacity Building at Liberty Hill Foundation. Liberty Hill is a public foundation dedicated for more than 40 years to advancing social and racial justice issues in the Los Angeles region through grant making, training, capacity building, and coalition building around key public policy concerns. And we wanted to weigh in and share that we want to affirm that we support the 2018 recommendations for updates to the municipal lobbying ordinance for the nonprofit exemption portion of those recommendations. We found that this part of the recommendations were crafted with input and feedback from both the community members and from especially nonprofit organizations that would be affected by it. The new proposal changes would provide more clearly defined parameters for engagement and eliminate ambiguity, in particular for small budget nonprofits, and would allow them to advocate on behalf of the clients that they serve, who are most often underrepresented and systemically and come from systemically oppressed populations, and allow them to act as a voice for their members who otherwise have limited to no access to policymakers and decision makers and are left out of really critical conversations that affect their lives and their well-being. And so we really support the nonprofit exemption recommendation of the 2018 proposal for 501c3 organizations.
Thank you for your comment. We will now be hearing from our next caller with phone number ending in 404. If you can please dial *6 to unmute and state your name for the record, and if you can also spell it, that would be helpful.
Good evening. My name is Winston Stromberg. That's spelled W-I-N-S-T-O-N, and the last name is S-T-R-O-M-B-E-R-G. I am a partner at the law firm of Latham & Watkins. I'm a land use attorney and a registered lobbyist in the city. Latham's land use practice covers jurisdictions all over California, mainly here in L.A. County, and many of which have lobbying ordinances and reporting requirements. My colleague, Emily Gibson, explained that Latham takes its ethical obligations very seriously, and we have internal policies and practices to ensure that reporting requirements in all jurisdictions are met, including here in the city. We're certainly not opposed to revisions in the city's lobbying ordinance to ensure transparency and clarity in the law, but many provisions in staff's proposal expand upon the current ordinance in unnecessary and burdensome ways. One of those that other callers have mentioned is the proposal for lobbyist reports to disclose each direct contact with city employees, including the date of the contact and the name and the title of the employee. The current reporting requirement gives adequate information to the public, especially when compared to the burden of trying to keep track of every telephone call, email, or text message with city officials and employees, whether sent to or received from the employee or made at city offices, the lobbyist's office, in the car, while traveling, so on and so forth. Lobbyists, especially on complicated land use projects, and that's my area, meet regularly with city departments regarding many issues related to a project. Even if a meeting is requested with a particular staff members, often that staff member will bring along other employees and from their department or even other departments. And the proposed revisions of the ordinance would put an affirmative obligation on the lobbyist to track down the title for every single individual attending such a meeting, even if the lobbyist had no idea that such individual would be there in the first place. In addition, the city doesn't have an accurate or updated database or organizational chart showing each employee's name and title. Each department handles their employee list differently, and not all of them are online, and many have not been updated in months. So they sometimes sit for almost a year without being updated. If the city is going to require lobbyists to disclose the title of the employees, there should be a corresponding obligation put on the city to maintain accurate and readily available databases. City departments have dozens of divisions that reflect the wide range of work they do. A more reasonable solution might be to require the lobbyists to disclose in their reports the division of the department with which they had direct communication. For example, the specific council office with whom the lobbyists communicated, or for an example from a particular department, the Land Development Department of the Bureau of Engineering. There are similar divisions within all the departments. This would be a lot more reasonable than requiring the title and date of each individual contact. Relatedly, and one other thing I wanted to touch on is lobbying related to the land use process. Almost all real estate development projects of a certain size in the city are legally required to obtain land use entitlements from the city. Seeking entitlements and advocating for our clients is very different from lobbying on a city ordinance or a proposed contract. This requires regular interaction with the planning department and other departments in the city, from Department of Building and Safety to Bureau of Engineering to DOT, LADWP, and so on and so forth. We don't have a choice about this with the environmental review requirements under the California Environmental Quality Act, the complexity of the city's zoning code, and other legal requirements. This process can take years to get through and require weekly or daily interactions with city staff to try to move a project forward. Even so, the Ethics Commission seems to interpret the current lobbying ordinance to mean that every interaction with city staff on a development project can be lobbying, even by right permits sought from Building and Safety. This is clear from a FAQ document that's currently on the Commission's website. So with this, I want to invite the Commission to think about whether it makes sense to address land use matters differently than other types of lobbying. I would suggest that the Commission take a look at lobbying laws in some other jurisdictions in California, such as San Diego and here in LA County. which have some exemptions that are unique to the land use context. It may even make sense to have a separate interested persons meeting to specifically address land use lobbying. Finally, I do want to note that if the goal of the commission is to propose revisions to the lobbying ordinance to address the corrupt activities that took place over the past several years in City Hall and which have been widely reported about, that is certainly a noble and appropriate goal. But increasing reporting requirements, however, is not going to discourage individuals who are flouting the law and undertaking in criminal activity. More focus on enforcement and increasing penalties against unregistered lobbyists and lobbying activity would be a more appropriate focus of a revised ordinance, rather than to overly burden the overwhelming majority of the lobbying community who are actually following the rules. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comment.
Hey, Nancy, is Blair Beston still on the call? Blair, are you still in here?
Blair?
I am.
Hi, Blair.
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks very much. This is Tyler Joseph. I'm the policy director. I just had a quick question for you. First of all, thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate your comments. I was just hoping that you could maybe help us understand something regarding the general scope of the contract between the bid and the city. So you mentioned some of the advocacy toward the end of your comment, and I was curious to hear directly from you what you think a reasonable line might be to draw between, let's say, being in contact with the city for something that is very clearly within the scope of the contract, like the streetlight issue that you mentioned, versus the city reaching out to you about something more, even if they are reaching out directly to you as the bid, something more controversial, like let's say a minimum wage bill or something like that, that the bid would then respond and give its own position in response to the city's inquiry. What do you think, as somebody who deals with this under the contract, would be legally a fair and reasonable way to sort of draw that distinction without either banning everything or allowing everything and, you know, sort of excluding the activity that we think probably is not lobbying activity that people need to know about, but also catching the things that we do that might fall into the more traditional advocacy, like the minimum wage bill, for example?
Well, that's a tough question, and I would probably defer to, you know, have us sit down and come up with something that makes sense overall. I would say if we're having meetings with elected officials regarding an ordinance or, something that affects the area but doesn't necessarily relate to the work that we do in particular, that might be reflective. If we are talking to them about something, for example, like side street vending, making the recommendation that they put something in the ordinance that deals with the trash that's left behind, because that's unduly burdensome to our budget and the work that we do on a daily basis, and it might not be something that's on their radar, then that area gets grayer. But I still believe that it's a discussion based around the services that we provide. Minimum wage would affect our budget truly, but also affect the city on a more global scale. So.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And I certainly don't mean to, you know, put you on the spot to come up with this.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's a legal, I mean, this is a really big decision that has to be made. And I understand, you know, that I understand the motivation behind it. I I've heard the other callers and, you know, obviously the corruption, is disturbing to all of us. It's difficult because we're in a rock and a hard place, truly, because we can't avoid interaction. I mean, it's what we have to do our job well. And we have a city government that enacts a lot of things so quickly. I would say
if
it's a submittal of a letter and a position, I don't know that would, if that's lobbying, it's a very, very, it doesn't even fall under the hours that it's a meeting where we discuss the issue amongst our board, and then people from the public can attend the meeting and weigh in on it. And then we would write a letter, perhaps taking a position on something that's being crafted. It doesn't mean that we're necessarily meeting with city officials repeatedly about that particular item, but if we were, then that might reflect an opportunity for, you know, lobbying, if that makes sense.
Sure, yeah, and I appreciate you answering this question. I know it is very complicated, and it's probably a very difficult line to draw, but just as we start to think about how that could potentially be done, we're certainly very interested to hear directly from you all what you think might be a reasonable line, or if it's possible to do that at all. So if any of the other...
I might just say one more thing.
Sure.
I would say if lobbyists are not necessarily required to share every piece of what they write or do in a public records request, we are. We people have access to our interactions pretty regularly. If it identifies an issue where there's an issue. Wouldn't that be considered more transparent than the items that we would be producing as a function of a reporting on lobbying?
Well, I think it just depends on your perspective. I think some other people might say that if there are people who are, for example, visiting the Ethics Commission's website and they would like to know about the lobbying activity that's going on in the city, maybe it makes more sense for that to be sort of the one-stop shop where they're able to see everything that people might be considering to be lobbying activity. So while it is good that it's public, I think the other perspective is out there that if it falls under the traditional definition the way the other activity does, and it's captured and publicly available on our website, that's all in the same place, so nothing is sort of being excluded if people are going looking for it on our website, if that makes sense.
Yes. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I would just argue that if people know what we do and we have to submit, a management district plan, we have to do outreach, we have the district vote for our existence. There's a great deal of transparency in that, in the sense that they get to weigh in on the work that we do. And our budgets are produced online, and it's literally a portal through the city clerk's office. So I would argue that if people had to go to two places and they get to see the work that we do and the interactions with our reporting through our quarterly reports, our annual reports, they can attend our meetings, that's a level of transparency that's not just produced with normal lobbying activity. And I haven't found an incident where a city contractor has been required to register as a lobbyist as a function of interacting with the city. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the question that we're sort of trying to get a grasp on is, what activities may sort of be beyond the scope of the contract between the bid and the city, such that people would have an interest in knowing it, even if it doesn't require that any of the money in the assessment is doled out, if that makes sense. So if you're advocating, again, just to go back to the minimum wage one, because it's a clear example, that kind of advocacy on behalf of the members of the bid does not require any expenditure from the money collected as the assessment and held by the clerk, right? So where that money is spent, the city would have to sign off on it, but for that kind of advocacy, that's not necessarily anything that anyone knows about if it's just contact between the bid and the city official, for example, correct?
Well, yeah, I mean, we, for example, our vendor for cleaning services is Chrysalis, and we provide jobs for people that are, you know, that does increase our budget. So it does, in a sense, affect that the work that we do. Could having meetings regarding minimum wage raising enter into lobbying, perhaps, but do those incidents happen frequently enough, and are we doing that in enough hours that it would warrant registering? Not really. Collectively, all of our hours and interactions with the city are numerous, but in terms of those type of incidents are a very small number.
Okay, yeah, got it.
Thank you very much.
I hope it helps. I really appreciate you kind of giving the back and forth in this. I know it's not an easy question to answer, so I really appreciate you taking the time to help us kind of understand
this. Thank you, Tyler. I appreciate it.
We'll now be moving on to caller with phone number ending in 010. Caller, phone number ending in 010. If you can please dial *6 to unmute. Okay, you might want to try that again. *6 to unmute.
Terrific. Everybody hear me?
Yes. Yes,
oh,
I can hear you.
Terrific. My name is Andrew Thomas. That's AndrewThomas. Good evening, Commissioner staff. I'm Andrew Thomas. I'm the Executive Director of the Westwood Village Improvement Association, and we administer the Westwood Business Improvement District, or BID. And like my colleague Blair Besson on the call tonight, I'm calling in to express my concerns about BIDs being included in the city's lobbying ordinance. I'm specifically concerned about the impacts to my bid if we have to report every single interaction that we have with any city person or department, because frankly, there are so many, and they occur as part of our day-to-day operations as mandated per our contract with the City of Los Angeles. A little bit about our bid. We were formed in 2011 with the primary function to ensure that our community remains clean, safe, and beautiful. To meet this goal, we perform a number of daily functions. We empty over 100 public trash cans every day. We pressure wash our sidewalks. We remove graffiti tags, flyers, stickers from our district. We clean our public infrastructure like light poles and bus benches. We maintain landscaping in our public street medians. We trim annually approximately 500 public street trees, and we maintain the public right-of-way every day of the year in our community. We also respond to requests from our community and our stakeholders. They regularly contact us to assist them in all sorts of things, cleaning up every kind of mess you can imagine in the public right of way, as well as other issues. Also, our team has a dedicated social service outreach coordinator who works to connect our homeless population to services and housing, and we regularly communicate with law enforcement as well when we report issues of concern, and law enforcement also contacts us. In addition, we also work regularly with Public Works, and they reach out to us fairly regularly. We need the city's help to complete our mission, for example, to address the many illegal dumpings that happen in our districts all the time. We need the city's help when streetlights are out, or when city signage is damaged or needs to be repaired or replaced, or when utilities fail, or when sidewalks are damaged, potholes need to be filled, or when our team witnesses someone committing a crime. We perform all these functions because we're contractually obligated to do so by the city, and we do so in the interest of the City of Los Angeles. We really have no choice but to work with the city to perform our core functions. Furthermore, if we have to document every 311 call or every call to law enforcement, it would really be an overwhelming administrative burden to my small staff. Our district is 25 square blocks of typically very densely populated and used area right at the foot of UCLA. There's always a lot going on and there's a lot of stress put on our public space. For us to meet the obligations of our contract with the city, we need to interact with the city to address just a myriad of issues that come up on every single day. Bids in LA comply with the Brown Act and are subject to the California Public Records Act, and our work is done in broad daylight. The public is well aware of what we do in Westwood because everything we do is on the public record. So asking bids to register and file lobbying reports will not provide additional information to the public, in my opinion. That's all I have, but I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for that. Thank you for helping us understand your concerns. We will now be hearing from caller ending in 271, phone number ending in 271. If you can please dial *6 to unmute.
Hi, this is Amy Forbes, F as in Frank, O-R, B as in boy, E-S as in sugar. I am a Lantis attorney at Gibson, Dun & Crutcher. I've been practicing there for 36 years. And I do activities that would be considered lobbying in terms of advocating for projects. But I also do a lot of transactional real estate work, as does our firm, where many times we're making contact with the city just to understand a situation. Is it a legal non-conforming use? Trying to understand what's happening with a particular document. And the changes, when I was just stunned when I looked at the changes, because the rules as they are now are going to add a huge burden. And many of my transactional colleagues who have nothing to do, and certainly I don't, you know, I hope they vote, but I have no idea if they even vote, are going to find themselves lobbyists. So I think there needs to be a distinction made between land use law and the kinds of activities that are engaged in due course that are not truly lobbying in my mind. The due diligence, people want to understand what the uses are. It's not clear. They call up a staff member to find out what does something mean. If you can't find a queue condition online, because it's really hard sometimes to actually find the materials, call up to City Hall to see, you know, what can you tell me about this or where can I find it? All of those contacts would now arguably, I think more than arguably, qualify as lobbying. And we do a significant amount of that work. And similarly, when you're working on projects, people that you work with, the geologists, the traffic consultants and other experts who are also contacting City Hall all the time just to get information to be able to complete documents would count. I know there are times when city staff reaches out to my clients to understand a situation and I have to respond, particularly now in the COVID world where the regulations are shifting and changing all the time. I've got a lot of clients trying to understand just what do these rules mean. And I'm making calls because I think some, you know, I'm not sure everybody's sort of trying to figure that out as they go along. And there's some types of approvals that aren't even legislative in nature that I think are really, the lawyer is like an advocate. It's like going to court and, you know, the city's like the judge and the lawyer advocates. And those to me shouldn't be in the same boat as true lobbying. And it's sort of been lumped in together with people who have gone to City Hall to try and get legislation passed or contracts approved or things like that. So I think I heard somebody else say it, and I agree with that I think there should be a lot more focus. And I really appreciated the detailed look at how this law is impacting the person who has the, you know, who keeps the streets clean and operates those kinds of services. And I would just request the same consideration because I think this will have unintended consequences. And at a time when the city, I think, needs to be focused going forward, how is the city going to rebuild? How are we going to get businesses back up as quickly as possible? Tying the hands of lawyers who are trying to help their clients to figure out what the rules are, it isn't necessarily a step in the right direction. And it also resonated with me that imposing additional requirements on the people who are already complying with the law is sort of not getting at the root of the problem, right? It's the people who are not reporting their contacts and won't comply that are the people that I would worry about. So I appreciate really the thoughtfulness of this discussion and the willingness to hear us out. But I feel very strongly that there are types of information that the city provides and planners provide that is critical to people being able to understand what they can or cannot do with their property. And I think if you ask someone, is that lobbying, they would be very surprised. Don't think of it as lobbying, but it would be lobbying under these changes. So I respectfully request that there be a specific look at how this can be, how you could accommodate those kinds of tasks. And I think the suggestion that someone had that other cities in Southern California have made these distinctions and could be used as a model was also a really good one. I appreciate you hearing me out, and thank you.
Thank you for that.
Amy, yeah, thank you very much for your comments. I really appreciate all the detail in there. I just wanted to make one minor clarification. So you mentioned a lot of the different types of contacts that a person could have with a city official that could potentially trigger registration as a lobbyist. There are a list of exemptions in our proposed definition of direct communication that would exempt some of the activity that you described. For example, one is scheduling a meeting or contacting a city official about a ministerial action. Another is actually representing a party in litigation with the city. So that's a very minor thing, and I'm just sort of throwing it out there for everybody else's benefit. But I just wanted to make that note and say thank you again for your comments, and we will absolutely take them into consideration, and we appreciate the detail.
And we will now be moving on to caller with phone number ending in 666. If you can please dial *6 to unmute.
Well, that was put very well. Thank you for having me. My name is Eddie Navarrete, E-D-D-I-E, last name N-A-V-A-R-R-E-T-T-E. I have a company called FE Design and Consulting. I want to begin by commending the commissioners and investigative staff for their efforts to ensure transparency at City Hall. I definitely want to echo the previous caller, I believe Amy, and hope we can put in the work in finding a way to accommodate more specifically how we would be applying these rules to bids. I am speaking today because I am concerned about the implications of overly broad definitions in our lobbying ordinances. There are hundreds of professionals in the city of Los Angeles who make their primary wages doing things like talking to city employees, relaying information to their clients, researching codes and policies, and even attending city meetings. These professionals include architects, engineers, designers, plans expediters, and even general contractors. The overwhelming majority of the projects are very small in scope. No one in these industries working on these small projects considers arguing with a plan check supervisor about applying the code as lobbying, nor would the average Angelino. Yet, if we apply the city's lobbying regulations the way we are told to do, many of these people are going to do just that. Some of these professionals also work with city staff on beer and wine applications at a restaurant or for a narrow side yard and single family dwelling. During these minor applications, we understand they're acting as lobbyists. As the owner of a lobbying firm, I know that most of the development community is still unaware that lobbying laws apply to their activities. Even the smallest projects result in professional fees that exceed $5,000 and require some form of influence of a city employee. So nearly all would be required to register under the proposed rule changes. I ask the commission to include plans to educate the development community and carve out exceptions that clearly exclude the work of architects, engineers, expediters, general contractors, and any kind of relative consultants. Thank you for your time, and thank you again for all the good work that you do.
Thank you for your comment. We will now be hearing from our next caller. I don't see a phone number here, unfortunately. It's a call-in user. If we have anybody else on here, we're going to go ahead and let them go next while we figure this out. So caller with phone number ending in 006, if you can please go ahead and unmute and state your name for the record. And if you can also spell it for us, that would be helpful.
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, that's good. Yes, I tried to call in yesterday, and unfortunately I was berated because I mentioned the FBI probe and the reason why you're having all these nice nighttime meetings. When's the last time the Ethics Commission met in the evening so working folks can actually attend your meetings? Now, the reality is this. You have a pattern and practice of helping commit crime in the city. RICO violations, as outlined in the United States of America versus Jose Weezer, Mitchell Englander, and everybody's favorite, Maury Goldman, the life of the party. So what you do is you have a Form 700. Yes. So when a politician steals money, he or she has two choices, and you enable it. One, lie to the FBI and backdate your check before the FBI contacted you, and you decide the value of the gift. Not you. No, the politician. The politician decides. So in the case of Mr. Englander, his total tab, let me see, I have it here, from the casino, was $14,949.22. And Mr. John Lee, who's a council member, he's called Staffer B, his tab was also $14,924.08. You know what they did? They decided it was worth $200. And, of course, you were sitting there, and people were going to your morning meetings like Mr. Previn, Mr. Hopp, Mr. Spindler, and my colleague, Pepita Pig.
Excuse me, sir. We are discussing the application of lobbying laws and the 2018 recommendations. If you can please stay on topic, otherwise we will be moving on.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about it. I believe you are. Am I talking about it, counsel? I think you're on topic. All right, so now I digress, yes. So in other words, what you need to do is the following. Do you need to rewrite the laws on lobbying? No. Do you need to continue to have these meetings? No. What you need to do is do the right thing. You need to go to the FBI immediately and surrender and bring all of your documents on all of the cases that you found money laundering.
Thank you for your comment. If we have any additional comments, if you can please...
Money laundering, yes, that's what you...
If we have any additional comments, if anybody would like to speak, you can please dial *9 if your comment is on topic and relevant subject matter, which all of the previous comments have been, and we thankfully respect you for calling here and staying on topic. If you do have a relevant comment, please dial *9 to unmute. Okay, we will now be hearing from caller with phone number ending in 803.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, my name is John Cabravan, JohnCabravan. Thank you for taking my comment. And I'm not a lobbyist or an attorney. I'm a resident of downtown Los Angeles, but I do follow city politics pretty closely. As you know, we're in a pandemic and we have an economic crisis, and I've been following along with the corruption and with the 2018 recommendations for the lobbying rules. My concern is this, that I think that some of these recommendations from the 2018 guidelines are going to put undue burdens with these new reporting. I think a lot of people and citizens of Los Angeles view that every lobbying firm is something along the lines of Liner LLP, these mega firms. But when some of the comments I had, we had a woman, and I believe Perez was her last name. I forget the first name. You know, she's a one-woman firm. And so many of these people are working individually, people doing conditional use permits for food and beverage, which we've had so many restaurants closing. I'm afraid that these new regulations are going to unduly burden them, and we're going to see the results of it in our neighborhoods, with change being able to happen less frequently because only the high-powered lobbying firms are going to be able to comply with these. I think that it is absolutely admirable, and I don't pretend to know all the motivations of those who wrote the policy, but I do think some of these are in response to the corruption scandals that have happened, and we absolutely do need to root that out. I just don't believe that this will do it. Because I understand it's not a convincing argument that we shouldn't write a law because bad actors won't follow it, but I don't believe these regulations are going to help us crack down on bad actors at all. I do think, as people said, we need to focus on people that aren't registering and find new ways that if you do, slip through the cracks and we're doing things like Mr. Goldman, that we find a way to root that out. I just don't think this is it. And as well, I heard some of the directors of the business improvement districts calling in. I love the BIDs in my neighborhood. These, especially in this time, are providing us with sanitation and security, and I shudder to think where my neighborhood in downtown Los Angeles would be without it. I know they operate on fairly small budgets in the scheme of things, and if they had to pull money over to start registering as lobbyists, I would ask why we're doing that, to pull money away from sanitation and security, especially right now during a pandemic and an economic crisis and a period of rising crime, especially since they are applicable to the Brown Act and the CPRA. I could be wrong on this, but I can't think of another public body that I know they're not public officials, but they're a public body to the Brown Act that's also a lobbyist. Maybe that does exist somewhere else, but I don't think when our city officials call up the county or the state that they're registering as lobbyists. And I know that's not a perfect analogy, but I would think we kind of have to decide as a city, are they a public body or are they a lobbyist? It doesn't seem to me that they should be both. They already have that obligation of being open and transparent through public record acts, and now we're going to add another burden onto a small staff. So I just think it would be detrimental to the BIDs and then be detrimental to people like me that love their neighborhoods when we see those resources pull away. I thank you for listening to my comments.
Thank you for your comment. And caller with phone number ending in 666, I know you spoke earlier. I see your hand raised. I'm not sure if you raised it again a second time, but please go ahead and comment if you'd like. And phone number ending in 666. If you have a comment, you can dial *6 to unmute. Okay, and we do not seem to have any further comments. If you are still on the line listening and would like to speak, please dial *9 to raise your hand. We'll just wait a few seconds here and see if we have any further comments. Thank you so much, everybody, for taking your time this evening to join us here to express your thoughts. Our commissioners greatly appreciate it. And Tyler, I know if you'd like to add something here while we wait to see if we have any additional callers.
Yeah, I'll just briefly say thanks again to echo what Nancy said. We really appreciate you taking the time to be here and to give us your thoughts. If there's anything that you heard tonight from us or from anybody else on the call that you have questions about or that you'd like to weigh in on, please shoot us an email. Please go to the website and fill out the comment section there. We're not just hosting these meetings to check the box. We really do want to get a better understanding of how you feel about these issues and come up with the best possible proposal on them. So thank you for the comments that you've provided already. And if you have anything else, please send us an email. So thank you again.
And with that, it looks like we do not have any additional comments. Last call. If you do have a comment, please dial *9 to raise your hand. I do still see several people in the room, but no raised hands. So this is the last call. *9 to unmute if you have a comment. Seeing none, this concludes the special meeting. Thank you all for joining us. Have a good night.
The recording has stopped.